Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meet in 3, we look at the ways indoor and outdoor spaces are being reconceptualized during the pandemic to better suit new modes of living, working, and eating.
Brought a vibrancy and an energy back to the city streets that were so dearly missed during the height of the pandemic.
This is about how we can grow indoors all year round using proprietary technology that we've developed.
How do I have someone understand, look, don't take a next to the Juneberries because you can eat those. That's free food.
Tune in to Meet in 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every day in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Tomu Kisaichi, who is the owner, grower, and winemaker of the Maboroshi Vineyard in Sonoma, California. Tom is courageous. Without any background of winemaking, he went to France to study wine at one of the greatest Burgundian wineries in Givry-Chambertin, and eventually in 1999, he opened the Maboroshi Vineyard with his wife and business partner, Rebecca. Tom practices the biodynamic agricultural method in his vineyard. His wine reflects the pure and lively flavors of the soil, and that is why wine lovers chase his wine. So today we'll discuss how Tom got into wine, how he started his career in wine without any background, why biodynamic methods are important in making great wine, and the Japanese wine pioneer in Sonoma in the early 20th century. By the way, that person was a former samurai, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So if you haven't, please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now let's start a conversation with Tom Kisaichi. Hello, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay. So
hi, how are you?
Good. We're good. But how are you doing? Because your area in Sonoma, California, has been in danger due to the wildfire. So everything's okay now?
Yeah, it's a slowdown, but still we have a lot of, fire warning. So until we have a rain, we have to be cautious about fire. So, okay.
Right. Well, good luck with that. So, first of all, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Okay, I'm from Osaka, Japan, and I eat everything except for the natto. I don't like natto, but I like to eat all the, Osaka is very famous for the good food. Okonomiyaki, takoyaki, yakisoba, something like that.
Right. Yeah, Osaka is really the center of food culture, people say. And it's casual, yet very approachable and less expensive compared to the next door Kyoto. So, yeah, you are lucky that you grew up in Osaka.
Yeah, thank you.
So how did you get into wine?
Yeah, that's a kind of a difficult question. Just I like wine, so I wanted to make wine.
Right.
Yeah, people. Not a big motivation or something. I like wine.
But I heard an episode that you were born into the family of a liquor store, and then you happened to taste Alvatage, which is one of the best Burgundy wines, and you really decided to pursue carrying wine.
Long time ago, one wine magazine came here to interview me, and the writer asked me, what wine impressed me? And I said, Radash.
Okay, right. Yeah. I'm sure there are like million other good wines that you got to know. Mm-hmm. Right. But then you, in 1991, you went to France to study wine and worked at Domaine Armand Rousseau in Gibraltar, which is the home of the greatest French wine. So how did you get the job there?
It's a long story. At that time, it's very difficult to get a business visa, a working visa. And I get a student visa at the University of Bourgogne in Dijon. Mm. And at that time, I had a connection with a salesperson of the winery in New San Giorgio. So I asked him to take care of me at the winery. And I went to there. And, as soon as I arrived at Dijon, I went to their winery. I can't tell the winery name now.
Okay.
At the winery, they said, "What are you doing here?" They don't know. They don't know I'm coming to study winemaking.
Wow. And,
I cannot go back to Japan. And
right.
If I go back to Japan, everybody laugh at me. Right?
Right. Yeah, because I heard you were with your wife and your 3-year daughter too, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And I know everybody called me a loser or something like that. I asked my French teacher at the university, write a letter in French. Why I can come to France and what I want to do in French. So I carry that letter and knock on the each winery. And the third winery or fourth winery, that's Domaine Armand Rousseau.
Wow.
Charles Rousseau is the owner. And he said, okay, you can work here.
Nice.
And,
fortunately,
his wife has a Japanese friend, and they like Japanese culture. So I was lucky, kind of.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's such a great coincidence. And I think it turned out to be, you got lucky to be able to work at such a great winery.
Yeah, it's very nice. But first winery I visited is Romane Conti.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
So, but didn't happen. But it's okay. I think sounds like it's really amazing place. But what was the biggest challenge that you faced while you're working at the Domaine Armand Rousseau?
So I thought winemaking is work in the cellar, that always he took me to the vineyard. So I have to take care of the vines every day, outside work, not the inside wagyu. I thought I can taste the wine every day or something like that, but it never happened. Always vineyard wagyu. And you know, weather is not nice over there. California is very nice, but over there is, it was very cold in winter, and that's a very depressed. And also, I couldn't speak French at that time, right?
Right. So basically, you became a farmer, right? Instead of selling winery in the winery. So, but what's the? I mean, everybody says now, real wines made in vineyards. Is that what you learned from?
Yeah, I learned I can say good grapes makes a good wine. The bad grapes makes a bad wine. So grape is very important.
Right. Well, that's really, I think France is really one of the most advanced countries in terms of your very natural and sustainable farming practice. So I think you went there at the right time to get to know what is happening. But you moved to California in 1992. So why did you move to California?
So it was very, very cold over there. And the weather is not nice. And at that time, almost 30 years ago, right? That generation, they are not nice to the foreign people. So they are very snob, and they never speak English. And my wife also, she doesn't like French people, so we moved to California.
Right. Okay. That's a good choice.
And, another big reason, and property, so vineyard value, in France, 200 times more expensive than California. So it's impossible to buy some vineyard for me.
Right, because each piece of land is already graded, so they have a set price depending on how much grade wines they produced in the region in Burgundy, right? So sounds like it's impossible to have a piece. And then you chose Sonoma, not in Napa Valley, right? So why is that?
When we came here, we look around Napa Sonoma almost 3 years, and I like the Pinot Noir and Lucien River or Canelos area. We are looking for the vineyard, Sonoma is more like country, Bourgogne style village, you can see. Napa is a very like a Bordeaux style and very business like atmosphere. So I don't like Napa area.
Right. So, I mean, personally, I've been to Sonoma. It's almost impossible to believe that the Napa and Sonoma are really next to each other because they have totally different culture. Napa is more like bigger corporate based wineries, and Sonoma is smaller, I believe.
Yes.
Right. And like I said, and Sonoma is really suited, especially where you are, that's the Washington River Valley, is known for good climate for Pinot Noir, right?
Right. Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
That's really the Burgundian wine grapes. Right. Yeah. And, the movie, The Sideways, that's the Pinot Noir. That's very sensitive and difficult wine to grow. But you can grow a good Pinot Noir in Sonoma.
Yes.
So, and so do you, you know, the culturally speaking, do you find California more kind of interesting to you than, you know, really well established French Burgundian wine culture as a winery owner?
I don't know. The Bourgogne and the California is much different. You know, Bourgogne, they make your wine by like an experience. The California is, you know, is the technical, mm-hmm. so machinery stuff. And actually, so I don't like so, California way. Oh. I like so, like a experience way. So experience or traditional way.
Right, like Japanese sake making, it's more about the human elements really affects the taste of the drink. That's the style. Right. And then how did you study wine, though? I mean, you spent 1 year in Burgundy, and you moved to California. So after that, how did you study winemaking technically?
Yeah, at first, I went to the UC Davis. That, you know, two academics over there. And the professor told me to work at the winery. And so I can learn the more practical stuff in the winery. So I cellar work and lab work, and I became an enologist winemaker.
I mean, by the way, the listeners who are not familiar with UC Davis, that's the Harvard of wine study. So you went to the best way to study wine. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. You know, the classmate at the UC Davis, they know the wine about the red wine or white wine. They don't know about I came to the California. I studied the Jubilee Chambertin. They don't know the Jubilee Chambertin.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, they are just student and how do you say it? Actually, wine level is not good. They know the chemical stuff or those stuff, but
it's kind of refreshing, right? Because I happen to study wine personally because I like wine, but you know, if you don't intensively study wine, you have no idea. What is Burgundy? What's the grape? And who cares, basically? And the California attitude is, well, if it's good, you drink it and you enjoy it. That's really refreshing. And I think, you know, you mentioned really expensive land price in Burgundy because of that traditional mind. And this is the history. It's proven you drink it because it has to be good. And that's why Burgundy wine tend to be very expensive for an ordinary public. So, yeah, I kind of like that approach of California, too.
Yeah. That's right. French people are very smart. And, you know, the wine has like a story or extra value. So more expensive. But California is a new land, so... They don't have a much story, so just taste wine taste.
Right. Okay. And because you are in Sonoma, I really have to mention Kanae Nagasawa. I think you're familiar with this Japanese gentleman who was one of the first persons who have succeeded in the wine business in California. And yeah, so maybe you can tell us about him.
Oh, okay. So yeah, about
yeah, so who was Kanae Nagasawa, and what did he do?
Yeah, about he's a son, he's a samurai, right? From Kagoshima, Satsuma. 150 years ago, he went to France to study, and several years later, he moved to New York and joined the cult group. And the cult group moved to the Fountain Grove in Santa Rosa, where about 10 miles from here. And they start making wine, Santa Rosa.
Right.
And yeah. And Nagasawa Kanae took over winery, and he started his own business over there. And he's a very talented winemaker, and also talented by economy.
Right. And what I heard also is that he went to study abroad with the Japanese government mission when he was 13 years old. And then I think he happened to stumble onto that cult religious organization, not because he was really into that cult, you know, minded person, but because of his situation, he had to rely on somebody. And then the other members left, but he decided to stay. And I also know that he went to the Cornell University to study, and he decided to live in this country forever. And then he went to California. So he's a quite in the story. And what I heard also is that his wine, California wine, was the first wine that was exported to England from California. So he made the history. And and I think his Paradise Ridge Winery nearby, your winery?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Right, that used to be his winery, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you know the inside story?
I don't.
he has no kid, right? He never married, so he doesn't have a child. So he asked his nephew and niece come to California from Kagoshima to inherit his property. At that time, there is a bad law. California alien land law or something like that, which prohibit Asian people own the land.
Wow.
Nephew and niece could not heritage his property.
Wow.
Yeah. When he passed away, he said, I would be back. Do you know what I mean?
No.
that his curse started.
Oh. Curse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And 30 years later, there is a big fire in Santa Rosa. And then 50 years later, big fire and the Paradise Ridge Winery is burned. Do you know that?
Wow. So there's a curse really went through.
And,
wow.
There is a small museum in the basement of Paradise Ridge. So Nagasawa Kanae's kimono or sword. And it are something all burnt up. So I thought the course was completed, finished.
Right.
But one week later, they found the sword. So course still continued.
Wow. Right. See what happens. But yeah, so that's Mr. Kanae Nagasawa, former samurai, who made a great story in California and wine history. And I heard in 1983, when the President Reagan went to Japan, he mentioned Nagasawa's name. And then that was how he got finally recognized. So maybe that can ease up a little bit of curse, but who knows? Anyways, so
no, that's what I made up. Okay, that's what I made up. my story. I'm going to write a book.
Okay. Yeah, let me know when it's ready. Yeah, we're gonna talk about the book. So why did you name your vineyard Maboroshi?
Oh, this one. So 1991. I told my parents and my friend I will go to France and I want to study winemaking. At that time, one of my friends told me that's a dream, right? For it's a Maboroshi, so don't go over there. Because I was already married and I had a kid, daughter. So I have to settle in Japan. But I did.
Right.
And yeah.
Right.
And, so Maboroshi come true.
So, yeah, I mean, Maboroshi can be in Japanese. It can be like, well, dream or something like very whimsical dream. Something like, you know, like a very elusive dream that you can't probably get. So that's interesting. Yeah. You tried to name the winery with a dream.
So I explained to the American people, the impossible dream come true.
Right. And you made it. Right. So, by the way, so you both grow grapes, of course, because vineyards means everything almost for you in winemaking. And make wine and your vineyard is certified organic and biodynamic. And most of us are familiar with organic, but what is biodynamic and what is it important to practice the biodynamic method to produce great wine?
Biodynamics is, how much do you know about biodynamics? So about 100 years ago, Rudolf Steiner, you know the Steiner school. Rudolf Steiner is like a philosopher.
Right.
So 100 years ago, he worried about farming stuff. Farmer use a lot of chemicals in the farm. So he warned, don't use a chemical and don't destroy the natural circle. He told farmers, do this. And there are two important things. The one is, cow horn. Put the cow manure in the cow horn and bury it under the ground in autumn. And 6 months later, in spring, we dig out a cow horn and spread to the vineyard.
Right. Well, this sounds mystical, but I think basically you grow the natural bacteria, kind of like incubate the bacteria within the cow home, because cows already have the bacteria put in it, and then the soil is naturally merged into that kind of, as ground of growing the bacteria. So when it's ready in spring, so many good bacteria ready to grow more on the soil that may really fertilize the land, right? Is that the theory?
Yeah, yeah. How do you know?
How come you?
Usually people don't know about this.
I never understood this idea of cow's horn thing, but you told me now, so hey, that makes sense because, you know, bacteria grows. That's explosive once it's really grown, like anything, any mold, right? So that really makes sense. Like, you know, when you make sake, koji grows on a hot rice. It's the same idea to me.
And the cow manure, that's called compost, only 30 gram per 1 acre. So normal people, they don't believe that works for the vineyard. Only 30 grams, only just a handful of, one handful of some compost.
Right. Wow. But it's really important, right? But we take a probiotic for our gut microbiome. That's the same idea. You have to put the good bacteria on the soil so that the vines growing on top of it get the full benefit of that beneficial microbiome. And I think that really shows the taste of the soil. That's what people call terroir in France. And I think in especially in Europe, France and Italy, they are really keen on growing vines with the biodynamic methods. Is that correct?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and then you like the style of Burgundian wine, but you make wine in Sonoma and your background is Japanese. So how do you incorporate these three elements in your winemaking philosophy?
My winemaking philosophy, everybody asks me, but I don't have anything. I grow good grapes. So I always maintain some ground like a biodynamic way. Mm. And vines makes good grapes. And good grapes makes good wines.
Right.
And everybody thinks winemaking is difficult, but winemaking is very easy. I don't have to do anything. Just natural yeast makes a wine. But young winemakers, they think it's a technique. So they want to add lots of stuff. You know, in the winery, we have a lot of seasoning, cooking seasoning. Mm. They want to use those stuff.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I think you make it sounds like easy to make good wine and your wine is so popular, but yes, so basically you take care of the vineyard and you try to enhance natural power like yeast to just work well. So you make the environment and then let them do what they do.
Yeah, so. And I'm watching the wine, don't go wrong way, you know. Just the main street they are going.
Okay. Mm. All right. So, well, I have to taste your wine.
You should. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, okay. So we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss what types of wines he produces and the important role of Tom's wife, Rebecca, in succeeding the business. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009 and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome back. You are listening to Spanish. I'm your host, Aki Katayama, and my guest today is Tom Kisaichi, who is the owner, grower, and winemaker of Maboroshi Vineyard in Sonoma, California. So what types of wine do you make, and how do you describe the style of your wine?
That's a tough question. Yeah, usually, so people who drink my wine, they said always earthy. So my wine, you can taste, terroir, because our ground is a little different from other places.
And you make Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, mainly Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. So Pinot Noir and Chardonnay are both known for the grapes that really reflects the types of the soil, climate, water, and everything. So I think that's exactly what you're saying earlier, that you let them express what they have from the soil, and that's the style. I think that's why people say it's earthy, terroir-driven wine, right? And you only make 150 cases a year?
Oh, depends on the year. I have a contract with another winery, so sometimes I make 150 cases, and sometimes around 800 cases.
And your Maboroshi label, as a Maboroshi vineyard, you make 150 cases and sometimes work with other, because you have a vineyard to sell grapes from the vineyard to other wineries. Okay. So your wife, Rebecca, is also a great business partner. So how did you meet each other, and what is her role in the business? I heard she has also great experience working with the notable growers and winemakers.
Right. How did you get this information?
Oh, I do a lot of research.
Yeah, almost 40 years ago, we met in Osaka, at a disco. And 36 years ago, we married and still together.
Wow. But why is she in Japan when you met?
She likes the Japanese literature, like Mishima Yukio or Kawabata Yasunari. So she came to Japan to study Japanese literature.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Right. So, and then, so what does she do as a partner of the business at the winery?
Yeah, she also worked at another winery, and she had an experience of vineyard management, especially, do you know the Helen Tally?
Oh, Tally of Zinfandel.
Like, oh, that's a brother.
Right, so that's the sister.
Very famous legendary winemaker. Mm. But anyway, two or three years, she, Rebecca works under the Helen Tally. So she learned a lot of vineyard stuff.
Mm. Right. So it's great that you can closely work together and strong business partners. Both are very experienced. So, yeah, and then so I heard that you said earlier that you sell grapes to other wineries, and so who are the clients?
One is a Deloitte winery, mm. and another one is a Dutch Crossing winery.
Okay.
Deloitte wineries was owned by a French company and a French winery in the Burgundy, and they operate biodynamically in France, and they asked us to do biodynamically originally.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I like Deloitte, but I didn't know they were owned by French people. Right. So do you think more Napa Valley or the Sonoma and Napa winery is becoming more biodynamic now?
No, I don't think so, because biodynamics, you have to work very, very hard. Mm. And production is not much different.
Right, but you can use any pesticides or any chemicals on the soil, right?
We don't use any chemicals.
Right. So it must be really hard to, because just in case something happens with the climate, you just have to deal with it without preventing anything, right? Okay. So where can we buy your wine?
Directly we send it to the United States.
Okay, within the U.S. So is it online?
Online, yes.
Okay.
But it depends on the state, different. So I'm not sure we can send to.
Right. Yes, that's the problem always. Alcohol sales between the states. Okay, so. Your winery, it's www.maboroshiwine.com. That's MABOROSHIwine.com, maboroshiwine.com, right? That's the online shop.
Yes.
Okay. So what are your plans?
Oh, I want to retire. I want to go to Mexico.
Really?
Yeah.
So why
I don't know. yeah, everyone asked after retire what do you want to do. So I always tell them I want to go to Mexico, and I want to see young ladies on the beach
with Rebecca. Right. Okay. So yeah. So please keep me posted, and I will. Definitely try to visit you when I next time I go to California. I don't know when I can fly again, but yeah, that'll be great to be able to visit your winery. So hopefully I will see you there.
Yeah, and we have a apartment, so you can stay our apartment.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
So all right. So, thank you so much for joining us today, Tom, and good luck with the whole weather and wildfire stuff, and please stay safe.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or at kikokatema.com. Japan Needs is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Jeff Grinchich, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Japan Eats is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.